We go and grab a quick bite.
We watch a movie, then fight.
We're the Fast Food Film Friends.
You're listening to Fast Food Film Friends, the show where two people sit down for a relaxed meal, completely oblivious to the gruesome ride on which they're about to embark.
I am not oblivious at all to the gruesome things we do to ourselves on this podcast, Nathan, but that is correct. This week we are talking about The Menu while eating Wendy's Italian Mozzarella Cheeseburger.
From IMDb, the plot summary of The Menu reads as follows. A young couple travels to a remote island to eat at an exclusive restaurant where the chef has prepared a lavish menu with some shocking surprises. And Kevin, why don't you tell me about what's on tonight's menu?
I will. First course is the Italian mozzarella cheeseburger, which includes a quarter pound of fresh beef, topped with fried mozzarella cheese, marinara sauce, and Asiago cheese, all sandwiched between a toasted golden garlic knot bun. Wow, I did not know that twist was coming with that bun. That bun sounds great. The rest sounds like I'm going to have a very difficult night.
Yes, you are. Your fate might be worse than that of anyone in this movie.
Potentially. Or very similar in terms of just, well, I don't want to spoil anything, but similar ends, potentially. Nathan, I'm very excited to A, eat that food, but B, super pumped to watch this movie. This movie, I think you exited the theater, immediately texted me like,
yeah,
we are doing this for the next episode. Go see it right away. Which I did. And then I saw it again, actually, yesterday, because I just couldn't get enough. And the first time I saw it was after a very long day. Wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. But man, what a flick. What a flick this was. I think we're going to have some good-ish to talk about, as the kids say.
Once in a while, I have that moment in the theater where you're not next to me. I think to myself, man, I just want to time travel to when you and I are sitting right here talking about this movie.
Correct. I think I could guess about 6 to 7 different parts of this movie in the first like half hour that probably made you think that. It's just so good. I was in a totally empty theater yesterday, so people aren't flocking out to see this anymore, apparently. But if you have not seen The Menu, first off, probably stop listening to this. Well, until we get to spoilers. But B, go see it right away. You want to see it in a theater. It is beautiful to watch. Just so good. Go see this movie and just support original, weird, I don't know what other words to use for it, intense movies. It's just, just a treat. And I saw, I think the day before I saw Glass Onion in a theater and fully packed, literally not an open seat in the theater, which I will say makes me very happy to see that theaters are full. But it also reminded me of how obnoxious old people are in movie theaters. I was sat between two old couples who just talked basically at full volume the entire time. So The Menu is a better theater going experience, I would say. And you're not going to be able to see Glass Onion in the theater anyway once this is published. So
yeah, so Glass Onion, the sequel to Knives Out, this bizarre theatrical release where Netflix is putting it in 600 theaters, which is not very many, for 1 week.
Yep.
And then it'll be on Netflix in Christmas time?
I think, December or something? Like right after?
And of course, hype is huge for this movie because everyone loved the first Knives Out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into anything spoilery about this, but isn't it weird how similar these two movies are?
Yes.
Really weird.
Very weird. So I sandwiched it. Like, I saw The Menu, then I saw Glass Onion, then I saw The Menu again. And I totally noticed that as well. Like, star-studded casts, very similar themes and motifs throughout, and people just kind of, you know, getting their comeuppance in both, I think. I don't think that's too big of a spoiler to say. But yeah, very similar feels, themes, looks. I think I liked this one, The Menu, that is, better than Glass Onion myself.
I think Glass Onion, I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah.
This is not a Glass Onion episode, so we don't have to go into detail. I was a little bit let down. I think it was a fun time, and 2 days later, I had forgotten about most of the entire movie. Yeah. It's very silly. It leans into the silliness.
Yep.
I like some of the kind of convoluted plot where it's like you see things from a different perspective. It's fun. It has, similar to the first Knives Out, it messes with who you think you're rooting for, that kind of thing. It's a fun time.
It is.
But I completely agree. I think that The Menu is, I think it is such a finer movie.
It is fine dining compared to an all-you-can-eat buffet that is Glass Onion. I think Glass Onion is, in my mind, like, if they had not gotten Rian Johnson and Netflix had just bought the rights to, like, Benoit Blanc, and Netflix just made their own spinoff of Knives Out. That's what Glass Onion would be to me. It seems weird that it's the same, that it's Ryan doing it again.
Yeah. It feels to me like an amusing fifth installment in a series.
Yes, not the second.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see if from here, because there's guaranteed to be a third Knives Out film. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see if it gets even more kind of like wacky and...
Seems like they're going that way.
And kind of exaggerated, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, we should leave it that.
Yeah, we should talk about
the and talk about the, menu, talk about the menu, which I think is a fantastic movie. And we're going to get into it very soon. We should stop ourselves. We have more to cover.
Yeah. This is just the amuse-bouche.
Yeah. I like to think of all our episodes as, you know...
6 or 7 course meal.
We amuse the bouche.
Yep, that's right. As the bouche likes to be amused.
And then we get into some appetizers in the form of Nimble News.
Correct.
But you know what? This week, in the spirit of the holidays, we just passed Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Christmas is everywhere around us. What do you say we go around the table and say some thimble thanks?
I'd like to do that, Nathan. I was put in a position where I had to do that twice this Thanksgiving. And I don't like it, but with you, I do. So let's dive in.
Thimble Thanks is the part of the show where we take a step back from the hustle and bustle of the holiday season and express a little gratitude for the things that make life worth living. Kevin, how about you start us off?
Nathan, I'm thankful that my over 100-year-old home has radiator heat instead of forced air. After staying with family and friends over Thanksgiving, I felt like a piece of meat in a dehydrator slowly turning into jerky. Coming home to my wonderfully warm, cozy, clanking radiators was such a treat. They don't blow dust around, they keep this place so warm, and my skin, allergies, and general respiratory health thank them.
I'm thankful for Julia Roberts and George Clooney.
Did you see that?
Whose latest movie, Ticket to Paradise, is everything you want it to be. In the film, they play a divorced couple that travels to a tropical destination in order to stop their daughter from making the same mistake they made 25 years ago. It's filled to the brim. No, it's overflowing with charm, romance, laughs, heartbreak, hijinks, and killer jumpsuits. If, to you, that sounds like a fun way to spend an hour and 45 minutes, check out Ticket to Paradise. And if that doesn't sound fun, you're wrong.
A cornucopia of romantic comedy. Nathan, I'm thankful for all the friends, family, coworkers, and beyond that donated to my Movember campaign this year. I've been participating in Movember for 16 years, and this year is the first one that I hit my goal before the end of November, blowing past $2,000, and people are still donating. Preventing suicide, general mental health research, cancer prevention are all causes that are so important to me, and I'm so thankful that I'm surrounded by wonderful people in my life who are not only able to donate, but do so almost every year, and it makes my little Grinchy heart grow a few sizes bigger each year.
It's beautiful seeing people rally around such a great cause every year.
And such a mediocre mustache.
I'd like to thank Elon Musk.
I'd like to not do this podcast anymore.
And his gloriously tumultuous attempt at running Twitter for curing me of my imposter syndrome. Sure, I can sometimes be a total dummy who bites off more than he can chew and has little to no understanding of the things he's responsible for, but so is the richest man in the world. And you too can become wildly successful if you're born into a family with an emerald fortune.
It has really been fun to watch. I mean, terrible in a lot of ways, but man, just mind-blowing. I'm incredibly thankful this year for the 2-zone, queen-size electric blanket that I have placed under my mattress pad for the winter. It allows me to have my window open just a crack with a cold breeze pouring over me during the night while being slowly warmed from underneath. It's the coziest thing in the goddamn world and makes getting out of bed 10,000 times more difficult.
Kevin, I never thought I would say these words, but I'd like to give thanks to Burger King. Not for their subpar beef patties or their flavorless crispy chicken or, God forbid, their tacos, but instead for a limited time item they offered back in October, the Ghost Pepper Whopper. While it wasn't as excessively spicy as the marketing may have suggested, it was a really good burger, topped with delicious ghost pepper cheese, crunchy bacon, zesty queso, and crispy jalapenos, all on top of a nice soft bun.
Mm.
Although it's no longer available to the public, maybe the Burger King himself will hear this message and decide to bring it back next year. And if that happens, be sure to try the Ghost Pepper Whopper before it's too late. You'll be thankful too.
Nathan, my family's very thankful for Lactaid over Thanksgiving. No post-meal smells, substances, or sounds ruined our evening.
Substances. Oh, man. I am so thankful for it.
You're going to be thankful for it tonight.
I'm grateful to the filmmakers behind a new documentary called Fire of Love, which uses archival footage to tell the story of two volcano scientists, or volcanologists, who studied volcanoes.
Primatologists?
Close.
That's a throwback to the one person who's listened since the beginning of the podcast.
These are volcanologists who study volcanic eruptions up close in the 70s and 80s, and they filmed all of it. They took insane risks that no one else was willing to take, all in the name of better understanding these marvels of nature. And this film is such a lovely tribute to their philosophy, their love, and their discoveries that saved so many lives. If you're in the mood for something awe-inspiring, check out Fire of Love, which is streaming on Disney Plus.
Mm, what a treat. What a treat. Nathan, I'm very thankful this year for pet insurance. Between stomach issues, dog bites, and other issues, having pet insurance has saved me roughly a couple $1,000s this year, and I cannot recommend it enough.
That is all the time we have for Thimble Thanks. And let's dig into those Wendy's Italian mozzarella cheeseburgers and take out a policy on stomach insurance.
I'm going to grab the Lactaid.
Now, before we open these burgers.
Oh, I'm getting some very delicious smells.
I want to invite the listeners to go to our Instagram at Fast Food Film Friends, where we will have posted photo evidence of these things. Because, Kevin, I don't think you know or remember that these burgers are essentially Wendy's response to the Curder Burger from Culver's.
Yeah.
The fried mozzarella on these burgers is a patty of cheese that is fried.
Let me tell you, that Curder Burger did things to my system that I did not know could happen to my system. So I might need to double up on the Lactaid. I don't know what else I can do. Grab a glass of Pepto, maybe.
Let's open these up. How thick would you say this cheese patty is?
I mean, it's about... Why did I instantly go to this method? It's about the height of this patty is about the width of a finger, I would say.
I'd say it's like 3/4 inches?
Sure. Yeah. It's hearty, and this thing is saucy, too. I had high hopes for the bun, and I think that's the least appealing looking part of this.
Yeah, the bun looks the most like manufactured
and just
of this.
Kind of like old or moldy. I know that's like seasonings and herbs in there, but it's not very aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah, those like they're dark spots on top, you know, and you want those to have like actual volume and look like they were applied at the restaurant, but yes. They look like they were applied in the factory.
Pre-mixed in a 5,000 gallon batch of dough. But, I mean, it's saucy. You got the marinara coming off. The mozzarella looks little questionable, kind of translucent in places. But, again, it smells good. Why don't they do a chicken sandwich?
They have both options. Okay. They have chicken and a burger.
So, instead of a delicious chicken parm thing, you decided to make us eat this monstrosity.
We've done so many chicken sandwiches of different varieties on the show. I figured at least we'd be switching it up.
Yeah. First burger on the show.
Is there anything comparable that comes to mind? Like Italian, you got mozzarella cheese and marinara, but with some beef. I mean, it's basically like the beef acts as like meatballs.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. That is true. But no, not much else. It's kind of in a league of its own. Little David S. Pumpkins, as I like to say. But I'm probably going to like this. I mean, give me a pot of marinara, some beef, and some cheese. I mean, normally it's on pasta, but I got a breadstick on the side. I'm going to mash it all up in my mouth anyways. I think this is going to work. What do you think?
I think we should dig in.
Yeah.
This tastes like the lunch lady.
Yeah.
Went hard.
Oh, yeah. The the patty's definitely the low point, which for Wendy's is kind of rare. Usually their patties are pretty decent.
Never frozen.
This one's a little dry, but the marinara is pretty solid as far as the marinara goes. Bun's fine. Do they put mozzarella on top of the mozzarella cheese curd?
So there is a...
It's Asiago.
There's a slice of Asiago cheese.
Okay. Gosh, it's... I mean, I'm going to have to take my mustache off and run it through the dishwasher tonight. It's getting covered in stuff.
One bite in, I would have preferred the chicken.
100%. It's not bad. Like, it almost... I think because chicken parm is such like a well-known taste that it almost overrides your brain to taste like chicken. Like you're just tasting the marinara, the cheese, the garlic and the bread. And then you're thinking, I'm probably eating chicken Parmesan. What else would it be? There's no way it would be beef. And your brain is content. But yeah, should have got chicken.
I think this would come together so much better if the bun just packed a little bit of a punch.
Yeah.
When you take a bite, the top and bottom of your mouth are just being cushioned by a not very flavorful garlic knot bun. I mean, you think a garlic flavor, that's not hard for a fast food place to
smash in there.
Yeah. I don't feel like garlic is a difficult flavor to like artificially emulate.
No.
You know, I wish that there was more to this bun for sure.
I think they need to coat the buns in butter and bake them a little bit. It just needs a little more moisture and just a little more flavor and like a, you know, a crunch on the top would be nice for like a crisp.
Yeah, let's hear that. Let's hear your fingers on again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like I'm punching my pillow, you know?
This kind of feels like gym equipment.
Yeah.
Which again goes with the whole lunch lady went hard thing. They found some
old-ass buns.
In the closet.
Yep. And some old patties and said, shit, it's supposed to be chicken parm night, but this is all we got.
And honestly, they probably couldn't get away with just putting a patty of cheese on bread and saying, here's lunch. They had to have more protein, you know?
They definitely could. Let me tell you that much. After seeing some of my son's school lunches, they could get away with that 100%. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's so dry. I mean, the marinara hits in certain spots, but they need like a... You know what would be great? You know what would be great? What would make this?
Mm.
Papa John's garlic butter on the side to dip it in.
That's kind of what I had in mind when I say that like garlic isn't hard to cheaply introduce to your dish. You know?
Yeah.
Because that stuff at Papa John's, that's not real garlic. I mean, that stuff is just oil.
That's the only garlic I use. I use that in all my cooking. I've got just a cabinet full of those little.
You try dicing it up and you're like, it's not working, but I don't care.
I don't understand how people dice garlic and it's just liquid butter. I'm going to eat a little more of this, though. The curd is not bad.
Do you feel like it's hard to parse the flavor of the mozzarella patty versus the Asiago slice? Do you feel like...
A little bit. On my second bite, I've taken two, and half is gone. On my second bite, I got like a big kick of flavor, which I think is the curd that I did not get on my first bite. So I think that curd's got a little... I don't know if it's garlic or what... If it's just straight mozzarella, that doesn't make much sense. But, I mean, you can't, between the slice of cheese draped over the fried cheese, it's a little hard to differentiate.
You know, this has basically the same ingredients as like a beef sausage pizza.
Or a meatball sub. This is infinitely worse than any meatball sub I've ever had before.
Now, what do pizza crust and a meatball sub have in common? Crunchy bread.
Crunchy bread. You're right.
It's the soft bread. There's such little dynamic going on that it makes the crunch of the fried cheese is really the only thing you have that isn't just soft.
It somehow simultaneously has too much going on and almost nothing going on. It's like it should have way more flavor and taste and deliciousness, but it's just turns. I think it's the bread just gunking everything up. I think that bread just absorbs all the flavor and everything else and all the saliva in your mouth so that your taste buds just have nothing to let that food slide over him with. Honestly, get the beef out of there. Get the bread out of there. And just do mozzarella sticks with marinara dipping sauce. It'd be the same thing. It's the bread that sucks. It's the bread that sucks.
Would you feel the same way if you were 12 and was in the cafeteria?
No, I'd probably be championing this as the best thing that's happened to us in years. And forming a union to force the school to serve it once a week. But it's a very low bar. I was a public school kid. What the fuck was that noise? So you're taking a bite
of the bread.
Oh my God. If the bread can make a noise like that, you know it's not good. It literally sounded like you were biting a leather belt. Like, that is how weird that sound was.
From now on, with every bun, we're going to do the squeak test.
Mm-hmm. The curd should be squeaking. The bread, no.
I'm going to go all the way on this one.
You're going to finish it?
As we often say on the show, it is dinner time.
I don't think I'm going to finish it, honestly. And I normally am done by now. You're normally...
You know what? I think that for you, that's a wise choice. For me, it would be a wise choice.
You know what the worst part about this is? I want to finish it because I just took my trash out. And I know that if I put this at the bottom of a new bag, it's just my trash is going to smell terrible for a week. Is that reason enough to eat it? Maybe.
I think the raccoons would go to town on it if you just threw it out back.
That's true. I could do that. Frankie would probably get to it first, though. What do you think about this? What if they gave you a little side of marinara to dip it in?
Based on how long it took me to chew to answer this question, I'm going to say, yeah, some moisture would help.
Choking on bub. Oh, that was a long chew for you, I will say. I was impressed.
When we review food on this show, we engage in a lot of hypotheticals.
You know, sure.
Oh, I could use this. We could dip it in some of this. What if I had this on top?
Yeah.
It's not often that we say, man, it could really use chicken, and it turns out that Wendy's actually makes that alternative.
Yep.
So I feel like I have an obligation to try that and follow up.
I think you do.
In a future episode.
I will try to do that as well.
We should be, yeah, we both should.
Maybe we have a little chicken parm date night. Bring some friends. I guess that's not much of a date
night. Go see the menu for a third time?
Oh, I would. Honestly, I'd go see this movie 3-4 more times.
Yeah, I would too. I can't wait to buy it. I think it's going to be an often rewatched movie.
100%. I think it's going to be my yearly Thanksgiving movie. I've been, you know, every other holiday kind of has movies associated with them. I think this one's perfect for Thanksgiving and visiting family who you kind of disagree with on a lot of points, maybe.
Which, again, feels similar to Knives Out.
100%. 100%.
We have to drop that because I feel like in order to really compare them, we have to also spoil Glass Onion.
Yeah, yeah.
So from this point, let's just not anymore. But
I was done. You keep bringing it up.
Once and for all, if you like the Knives Out movies, absolutely see The Menu.
If you like any movies, go see The Menu. I think this one, I think it's so universally recommendable other than a few things that people might not like.
So Kevin, you sat down in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
You tucked your napkin into your shirt.
Yep.
And you were served The Menu.
Yeah.
Much like an actual fine dining experience, I'm sure you had a lot of thoughts about the presentation of The Menu, mm-hmm. the atmosphere, and the work that went into making what you consumed. And we're going to get into all of those things.
Yeah.
But what I want to know first is this. Tell me about how The Menu satisfied your taste buds.
I think this movie had everything. Salt, fat, acid, heat, umami, give it to me all. I mean, it is absolutely gorgeous. From start to finish, every shot is gorgeous. Whether it's the food on plates or on whatever it might be served on, whether it's the island that they're on, whether it's every single person in this movie who just look great throughout the entire thing, it is a feast for the eyes. Like, that's why I went to see it again, because I was like, was it as gorgeous as I remember, or was I just in a really good mood because the USA team had won the day I saw it first? It's so good. It hits that spot. Visually, gorgeous. The performances, I think, are all award-worthy. Like, Ralph has cemented himself with this movie. Last night, about halfway through, I was like, he's one of my favorite actors, bar none.
Yeah.
Like, he absolutely is astoundingly good in this movie. Anya's great. Nicholas is great. Hong, who plays Elsa, kind of the main waitress, is phenomenal in this movie. All the dinner guests are great. Like, the performances are just so believable. You think, like, I'm watching a bunch of really high-end people eat at a high-end restaurant. That's what this is. And they all play their roles so well. It hits that spot. The plot is fucking great. Like, start to finish, it's a 19-course meal that you just can't get enough of. The humor in it is phenomenal. The action is phenomenal. The violence is phenomenal. It's on all cylinders. Like, you think it would miss on one of these, because it does so much. Uh-huh. It does so much. And like, by the time you get to the ending, you're like, what else are they possibly going to do? And then the ending happens and you're like, oh my God, it's even better. Like, mm-hmm. It's even better. And it's just, it's a movie that if you appreciate movies, if you appreciate food, if you have ever worked a customer service job in your life, you have to see this movie because it just does not miss. I really don't think it misses on anything. And I've got like pages and pages of notes. I was jotting stuff down yesterday. There's so many lines in this movie that are like standout lines. Almost everything somebody says in this movie is a line that you'd be like, I'm going to quote that so much, but there's hundreds of them, so it's impossible to remember them all.
I'm so glad you saw it twice, because when I was preparing my thoughts for this, I couldn't remember the exact wording, yes, of any of them, because, yep, it's so intricately worded, mm-hmm, so perfect.
There is a diatribe about s'mores that I want framed and hung on my wall, because when it was first being said, I was looking around like I had finally been seen for the first time in my life.
I thought of you the whole time.
He calls a s'more like the most offensive thing humans have ever invented. It's everything wrong with us. This fucking monstrosity. Like, it's just like 2 full minutes of him shitting on s'mores. And I was absolutely dying. But like, so I don't even know how many courses are served throughout like this meal at the restaurant. Probably 6 or 7-ish. But it's this movie's presented in those little slices where it's a new meal or a new dish. And then kind of along with the meal is something else happening in the plot, you know, mm-hmm, at one or multiple tables. And it's just like the structure of this movie is so perfectly presented to you. Cause like by the time one's finished, you kind of are like, okay, what's going to happen? And then you get that clap from Ralph.
Every time you hear the claps and the cooks are at attention.
Oh.
I myself just sat up every,
yeah,
time.
You, I'm, get like, so,
yes,
excited.
Yes, chef.
And you see him kind of setting up the next courses in the background, you know, while so much is already going on, you see them like getting ready for the next thing. You're like, what are they possibly going to do next? And it's, I was watching, there was an interview with the director, Mark Mylod, I think, mm-hmm, is his name, yeah, who did like Entourage and Game
Succession.
Of Thrones,
he's
Succession. Love the guy. But there was an interview with Nicholas Holt, Anya, and him. And Anya and Nicholas were like, yeah, normally, you know, when other people are doing their scenes, you go back to your trailer. He kept them all in that restaurant, mm-hmm, the entire time, all the chefs, all the actors, and like must have just gotten so much good footage of like them in the background and everything, because it's just all seems like you can see little stories unfolding in the background of almost every shot, unless it's a close up, which don't even get me started on the kitchen close ups. Cause I was like, I just want a montage of all the food and chefs cooking.
So if you've seen Chef's Table before,
yes,
it has these cutaways of these gorgeously staged dishes,
mm-hmm,
and it, you know, it shows the text of like the meal title, which is hilarious every time.
Everyone is hilarious.
But it's shot in a way I'm like, they nailed the aesthetic.
Yeah.
Then I found out the second unit director, they got the guy that does Chef's Table to come work on this movie to do those shots.
Yes.
So it's literally,
yes,
and it's parodying,
oh, yeah,
Chef's Table.
Yeah.
With the guy that makes the actual show.
Which is fantastic. And that's the whole thing. This movie is absolutely kind of a satire parody, but at the same time, like, is so good on its own too, you know,
yep,
it doesn't need to be, but it is also critiquing so much of that high snobriety type of life and those shows that you're like, God, that looks good, but it must have taken 40 hours for them to get that shot of that burger on the rock with like leaves behind it and everything. But man, it's those food titles, like when it says the ingredients, just absolutely killed me. Like
let's wait to give specifics, because I don't want to ruin any, because they're so great.
There's so many good ones.
We gotta jump into spoilers pretty quick. I just want to say this is the most entertaining movie I've seen in years.
Yeah.
This story perfectly sums up my personal philosophy and the philosophy of this podcast.
Yes.
In a way that we have to wait till spoilers to unpack.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, what I'll say is that the ending is nothing short of exquisite.
Yes.
It is. This is the kind of like edge of your seat thriller where I really didn't think it would stick the landing. I was like, how could, because along the way, the chef is so, he's so calming.
Yep.
As tense as it is, you do feel calming. Like you're in his hands.
Yeah.
And he's literally telling everyone, reminding them how this is going to end.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, are they going to swerve? Is it not going to end that way?
Yeah.
But the means by which it ends, you will never see
coming. No, no.
And is glorious.
It is. Truly, truly. I think, this movie is like, you know, I know we said we weren't going to bring up Glass Onion again, but this movie is very much a movie that pokes fun at people of all ilks and kinds. And it was kind of funny, like, very similar to my theater going experience in Glass Onion, was hearing like the different people laugh at the different parts, like satirizing the, you know, people who they might be opposed to in real life. And it was really at Glass Onion, I was like, this is a fucking fascinating social experiment. Like these people laughing at the, you know, like overly done liberals, and these people laughing at like the guy shooting his gun up. And this movie was like, the biggest laugh of the night was a line that was like so brutal and insane, like that a theater of people broke out laughing when it's like such a dark thing that somebody says. Just such a fascinating movie. You will never be able to guess every direction it goes. It's just so unique. And I fucking love it. I love it. I honestly want to go see it again right now. Let's stop recording.
And see,
this.
I think the joy of discovering the directions it goes, that in itself is fun, but it's not one of those movies where once you know where it goes, you then say, okay, I don't need to watch that ever again.
Yeah.
I instantly want to go back. Yeah. I'm going to watch this so many times.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is so sharp, mm-hmm. both in its humor and its commentary. Yeah. So the co-screenwriters, they came from The Onion.
Oh, yes.
And then they both worked on, one worked on Last Week Tonight and one on Seth Meyers' show.
Perfect.
And you can feel that like they have to get very sharp commentary across in short headlines or short clips, and they know how to use a single line so economically to say so much with a few words.
It's fantastic. I mean, let's get to spoilers because I want to talk about 100 different lines.
I want to, before we get there, I do just want to bring up, you mentioned like awards possibilities for this film. I feel like this is not enough on people's radars maybe for that to happen, although I do think like Ralph Fiennes, he was born for this chef role. This role was made for him.
100%. If anybody gets it, it's him.
I think that he and the screenplay, I think that they both absolutely are up there with the best of anything I've seen this year.
Oh my god.
I think it's really interesting how this year 2022 has been a real roller coaster in terms of like release timing for movies. Like back earlier in the year, even into like early summer, it was like every movie was doing well because there weren't a ton of movies and people were excited to get back.
Yep.
And then late summer, there was nothing.
Yeah.
And then got into like spooky season and there were some pretty well performing horror films.
Yep.
And then now in November, we're all diving headfirst into award season where every weekend there's like three movies that I want to see. And I'm someone, we're both people who actually are aware of these movies and don't even have time to watch them.
No.
And so I think it's just so strange to me that they would wait until now to schedule this release when, like, if this had come out in, like, late August or September, I feel like this could have been a real sleeper hit.
There is that potential, but I also feel like they wanted it probably to be closer to award season, so it was rubbing elbows kind of with those movies that are coming out. But I knew I wanted to see this again before we recorded because there's just so much to it that I wanted to kind of go back for seconds, if you will. But I thought, you know, I was looking at movies to see and I was like, there are literally four movies that I have not seen that I should see instead of this. And it's impossible. There's just too many.
But so many of them are coming out on demand a few weeks later.
That's what
so
makes it even worse.
I guess it's okay.
I know.
It's such a strange time.
Very weird.
In theaters right now.
Very weird. And we won't talk about Glass Onion, but that making $9 million in like 3 days is not good.
More than that. I mean, it's done fantastic in this limited release. And then
it's crazy. I tried to see it in Minnesota with my family. Every showing was sold out. Tried to see it Sunday when I got back to Wisconsin. Everything was sold out. Had to go like midday on a work day. Like, it's just insane.
It's bizarre because Netflix could just decide, oh, we're going to extend this.
Yeah.
This is doing phenomenally well.
But then would as many people have gone if they knew, you know?
Right. And also then, will it be as much of a hit? Like, does this tight window of high demand make more demand when it's on Netflix? That's what they're counting on. Yeah. So, but it's weird and makes me
it
angry.
Is. I do hope this one begins to stream soon because I would like it to be seen by a lot of people who are not going to go to theaters to see it. The first time I saw it was a pretty full theater, but then yesterday, totally empty. Literally the only one in there. So I want more. I like, this is one movie I told my dad, like, you have to see it. And then he went to see Glass Onion. But it's, I just want everyone to watch it because I know people would fucking love it.
I followed the filmmaker Riley Stearns on Twitter. He did like Art of Self-Defense and Duel.
Yeah.
His review of this is, it's like a fucked up Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I loved it. I was like, yeah. That sums up
perfect
the whole movie.
Perfect.
Let's go ahead and jump into spoilers. Before we do that, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Mm. Are you a pet insurance company looking for a podcast to advertise with? Well, look no further. We love pet insurance, and for a fairly negotiated price, we'll advertise your product to our 13 to 14 listeners. 100% of our listeners have pets, and 0% have pet insurance. What a market! Fast Food Film Friends, the podcast for pet insurance ads. Statistics not backed up by any scientific method at all. Advertisements must be sarcastic and slightly funny. Fast Food Film Friends not responsible for any effect on your pet insurance brand.
And we're back, and it's time for our spoiler snack segment, the part of the show where we talk full spoilers about The Menu, and we dive into a snack. Kevin, if you could close your eyes, I got us a snack from Wendy's. I do want to say, Wendy's currently has a peppermint Frosty.
Ugh.
But you know what? I knew that we were going to have a giant hockey puck of cheese on our burger, so I opted for a different new snack they have.
I appreciate that.
I'm going to wave these in front of your nose. You tell me what you smell.
Dough? Like baked dough? Almost like a funnel cake type smell?
You're pretty close.
I mean, chocolate chip?
Colder.
Okay, so funnel cake is closer. Mini donuts?
Possibly even closer.
Is it a fair-related object?
I wouldn't say fair, but you are on the right track. Why don't you go ahead and open your eyes?
Oh, French toast sticks?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Literally, don't these also feel like cafeteria food?
They absolutely are cafeteria food. It's the only time in my life I've ever eaten French toast sticks. I hate French toast. I don't like French toast sticks.
French toast?
Not for me. I don't get it.
What do you not like? Is it like
the whole thing?
Egg and like the bread? Like,
none of it makes sense. Give me toast and egg separately. I don't need to mix them and mash it.
But they're so good.
They're not.
We're going to find out how these are. These are Wendy's French toast sticks. We got a four-piece pack.
Way too big
of
a box.
Two giant cups of syrup.
Jesus Christ.
Take one of those.
No, thank you. I mean, to be fair, they smell... Oh, God, the syrup got on my
They smell great. It's French toast. This is like your worst take I've ever heard.
To be fair, very unfamiliar with it. Didn't like French toast sticks in the calf as a kid. Wrote them off. French toast, you take toast, you dip it in egg, you cook it, right?
That's
the whole bit.
Usually maybe like some cinnamon sugar, yeah.
Dumb.
Let's dunk them.
They smell good. I'm going to go without syrup first.
Your loss.
Yeah. Nope.
Now, for those who like French toast, you should know that this is not really textured quite like French. Its texture is closer to like a potato cake.
I would say,
than like a French toast.
What the fuck do you mean a potato cake? Like a potato pancake?
Yeah.
I'd say this is pretty spot on. What are you missing from your normal French toast?
I think there's more of an airiness usually in French toast.
These are pretty dense. They are pretty dense.
Yeah, but not dense in like a creamy dense. It's more of like a chewy dense.
Chewy dense. Sure. Yeah, I'd rather have plain toast myself. I think the French don't know what they're doing around bread.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding.
These takes are going downhill.
I just don't get the appeal of French toast. Maybe it's because I'm not a big syrup guy. I don't know.
Well, you're not a big breakfast sweets guy. You're more of a savory breakfast
guy.
Way
more of a savory guy.
Yeah.
Yes. Give me that salty, savory goodness. Give me that umami over high fructose corn syrup and greasy bread. The texture of French toast to me is gross.
See,
more like French grossed.
You like breakfast foods with umami.
Yeah.
I like breakfast foods that make me say, ooh, mommy.
You like breakfast foods with a mountain of whipped cream on top, with sprinkles, and maybe a little ice cream on the side, too, which makes sense that you would like French toast. It's just not my bag, baby, you know, as Austin Powers would say. I get it. If you like French toast, I mean, you probably would like these. Am I wrong in that sense?
Not a lot of fast food places have something like this, so it's not bad if that's the itch you want to scratch, but, like, I would say these are below mid.
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to even, like, a portable French toast. This is just...
Yeah. Too thin of bread.
These really are just a single slice of bread.
Sandwich bread.
That was cut into four pieces.
Yeah.
And then turned into French toast.
I mean, how much are they charging for this? That's what I want to know.
This four piece is, I think, maybe, like, $3.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
Absolutely not. Would not get again. Wendy's with two misses in my book today, which is rare. Usually a big fan of Wendy's. Usually they know what they're doing. But everyone makes mistakes. Or mistakes in this case.
So this is only our second time featuring Wendy's in the show. It was earlier this year was our first time.
I want to let our listeners know that I'm a big proponent of Wendy's, and Nathan always shoots down my Wendy's ideas.
That's... not
summer salads.
True.
Summer
That's
salads.
That's the only thing. A salad. A salad.
Yeah.
On fast food. You wanted to feature a salad.
I'm
for
sorry
years.
That I'm not trying to die at age 37, Nathan.
My point is that Wendy's. I also like Wendy's basic foods.
Yeah.
Right. If I go there
Junior bacon
on a road
cheese.
Trip and I go get a couple sandwiches, I'm happy.
Yeah.
They rarely branch out, which is why we rarely feature them on this show.
Fair.
At all.
Fair.
Isn't this kind of just one big testament that they shouldn't branch out between this burger and these sticks?
I mean,
stick to Frosties, cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that.
Yeah,
I think,
and that's fine.
I think if they're going to branch out, they got to play it a little safer. I think they really went to the highest diving board at the pool and tried to do like a nice dive and belly flopped. Where they should maybe go to that, maybe the mid-level one first. You know, go with like a, instead of a beef Parmesan marinara burger, just tweak a couple things. Just add that, you know, cheese patty to a normal burger. You don't need marinara. It doesn't have to be its own. I don't know. It just seems like they're trying to do too much when they don't know what they're doing. I'm watching you strategically dip that without trying to spill syrup is repulsing and impressive.
You know what I thought about earlier today?
What's
when
that?
I was picking out my wardrobe.
Your wardrobe?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, like a closet or like a, you know, outfit?
Picking out my outfit.
Oh, you were picking out your wardrobe. You chose a white knit sweater to eat syrup and marinara covered foods.
And I was thinking, should I be concerned about that? But you and I are just tidy boys.
Oh, I'm a very tidy boy.
When have we ever spilled a drop?
That's a very, very good question. I'm guessing you have at some point.
No.
I know that we did once because normally we lay something down underneath the microphone to make it, you know, more soundproof. And once there was some cheese sauce on that.
Mm.
I don't know who that was. Can't be sure. But it did happen once. But we're pretty clean. I mean, I'm a clean freak. I think you're similarly fairly clean. But syrup...
That's the only way we can live in the same bunk bed.
Think how many laptops we would have burned through. If we were just messy syrup eaters. I mean, no keys would work. Both from syrup and the bunk bed hijinks.
All right. Am I going to eat this third stick? That's the real question.
You 100% are going to eat the third stick. You know why? Because you have a tub of high fructose corn syrup right next to it. Are you kidding me? You're probably going to eat the half a stick I got over here, too.
Isn't it amazing that the human form has been... I start a lot of my sentences this way. The human form has slowly been perfected for hundreds of thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then science comes along about 100 years ago and is like, let me just hack into your deepest weaknesses using something called corn syrup.
Oh, my God.
And destroy humanity.
Yeah, basically. Basically. I am always amazed. I make chocolate chip banana pancakes quite a bit in my home. kind of my signature breakfast move. And Aiden is he's a dry guy. Doesn't like syrup on his pancakes or his waffles, which truly blows my mind. It's literally like the sweetest substance on earth.
Have you gotten him checked out?
No, I refuse to. He's my boy, so he's going to be one of a kind. That's for sure. No doctor knows what they're doing around him. But he doesn't like syrup. And I'm like, it's literally sugar. It's just, try it. And he won't do it. And I think it's, when he was a kid, he didn't like to have sticky fingers. So I think he thinks it's going to give him sticky fingers. I mean, he's 23 now, and he's still not eating syrup. So clearly stuck with him.
Tidy boys yield tidy boys.
That is 100% correct. If there's one thing I'm passing down to him.
Remember that old sitcom, 2 and a Half Tidy Boys?
Oh my god, yeah. Terrible. But they were clean. I'm now going to go dump this syrup and half a French toast stick on the half a marinara burger that's in my trash. The good news is those burgers cost us to use about 50 napkins, so the syrup's got something to really soak into in there.
I was going to say, if you had poured the syrup in the trash bag strategically, you probably could have encased the burgers in like amber.
Somebody's going to be digging in a dump in like 300 years and find these perfectly preserved tidbits.
And they're going to try to clone them.
What were they eating back then? What a disaster.
Can I tell you why there's never been a more perfect film for this podcast than The Menu?
Because we live to serve and want to kill everyone.
Because this show is both literally and figuratively a celebration of the cheeseburgers of life.
Oh, yeah.
The mantra of this film and of my everyday.
I've never heard mantra said more Wisconsin-y in my entire life. That was the most upsetting. I just watched you strategically use syrup, and that enunciation was more traumatic.
This movie's mantra. Embrace what you love and fuck the bullshit.
Yeah.
I wake up every day and say that to myself. That's... And Ralph Fiennes told that to me for 2 hours in the theater.
Oh my God.
And I fell in love.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I love going out to a fancy restaurant and eating good food, but I'm not pretentious about it. I don't want the people serving it to me to be pretentious about it. I just want to eat good food.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like, it's such a good teardown of people who are like, oh.
Yes.
Mm. And those are the only noises I need to make. And you know the type of person I'm talking about. I am definitely, I think this movie kind of puts you in two camps. Those who serve and those who eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I come from a family of servers. I've been a server my entire life. Whether that's like retail or restaurant or whatever it is, or my current job even. And it was really funny because when I first saw this movie, the line that I mentioned earlier was, you know, somebody's trying to, we're in spoilers, so we're going to talk spoilers.
Yeah, full spoilers.
Somebody's trying to not get killed, basically. And he goes, Ralph says to her, this is one of my favorite lines, and it got the biggest laugh, goes, where do you go to school? And she goes, Brown. And he goes, student loans? She goes, no. And he goes, yeah, you're dying tonight. And like
so good.
The theater erupted. And then I kind of looked around and there was like a few people who were like not laughing at all. And I was
right.
Like, oh shit, you would die if you were in this movie. You're one of the people who would die. And then I was like, what a great like storytelling device to kind of almost pit the audience against each other. But do it that's not a subtle way, but like, it's subtle enough where like you can almost, I don't know. I loved the differences in people's reactions to it.
I think that the us versus them in this movie is much more nuanced mm-hmm. than you think at first, because it's not as simple as
rich versus poor.
Yeah.
It's not.
Because like the chef, he's not lower class.
No.
You know, he's a very successful chef. Mm-hmm. It is those who serve versus those who consume with no regard for the ones who serve them.
Correct.
And so you can be in any class or any demographic and still just appreciate those who serve you.
100%.
I think that we live in this time, this very specific sliver in history where more than ever, people are reassessing the value of service.
Yes.
And that leads to customers. We see all the time people losing their minds about long waits and poor customer service, because the status quo has always been, I have money. You, service worker,
yep.
want money. Therefore, do what I say right now.
I'm always right.
And now that the scales are slightly being tilted in the other direction, so a little bit more leverage given to the average employee.
Yeah.
People, and really it's like the older you are and the more that you've been used to that status quo, the harder it is to accept.
Yes.
That like, maybe your $10 can't get what it used to. And that's not just like an inflation thing. That's just like, you waving money in my face doesn't sway anyone like it used to.
Yes.
And what do you do about that? Because then do you maybe, God forbid, have to be a little nice and appreciative?
Yeah.
There's a line in this movie that has come to my mind every single day since I've seen it. I think it's the perfect one.
Can I guess what it is?
What is it?
You'll eat less than you desire and more than you deserve.
Exactly.
I knew it.
When this guy's like...
Set the scene. Because
the chef presents them with a meal that is dipping sauces for bread, but gives them no bread.
The breadless bread plate. Unaccompanied accompaniments.
And of course, there are some people in the restaurant who are like, genius. I can't believe it. And then there's all these finance bros who just want to have a good meal and are just here so they can tell their friends they went there. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, I get it. Can I have bread? Say, no, this is your meal.
Do you know who we are?
I'll pay you whatever. Like, just give me bread. I'll give you whatever. Just give me bread. I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And she leans in and says that. You will get less than you desire and more than you deserve.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times I've been like sitting in line at like a restaurant and I see someone being pissy and I just think, you are going to get less than you desire and so much more than you deserve.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that line. I think watch this, just there's three or four points where that table specifically is saying like, do you know me? We'll pay you money. And watching them say no to them and their reactions, it's like one of the most therapeutic things in the world. Yeah. It's so nice. And like, I try to be as nice as humanly possible to servers. Like if I was ever on a date and somebody was mean to a waiter or a waitress, I'd be like, absolutely not. Like we're done. Yeah. Like no fucking way. Like tip well. And like, I grew up with a sister who was a monster at restaurants. I can't even go to a restaurant with her. It's 17 substitutions. If it's not there, she's snapping at them. And I literally get so mad at the way she treats people that I have to like leave. And so watching them just be told no and them having no recourse to get what they want, because the people who are serving are going to serve you what they want to serve you. And that's what you're going to get. And it was just, it's so fun to watch because they just devolve so quickly.
And you can maintain that empathy if you, like anyone who has once been in customer service.
Once.
It stays with you forever, no matter where you go in life beyond that.
Yes.
And it is so satisfying to see this little contained environment in this movie where people's money means nothing.
Yes.
And you say, if you have no money, what on earth do you have?
Yeah. So through high school, I worked in retail at restaurants. College, I worked customer service at a hotel. I host trivia at a bar every week still. And it's just... Again, like you said, one time you work retail, you understand it. But like at one point in my life, I worked kind of at the top of the chain of retail. I was managing a retail store, and it was like the most satisfying job I think I've ever had, because I finally got to the position where if somebody was being an ass or being like, let me talk to a manager, that was me.
Yeah.
And I finally got to say no. And it was like, it probably happened 6 or 7 times when I had that job, but it was like, I felt like a fucking god, because you could just tell it's these people who come in every week asking for some special treat, and it's just like, no, yeah, we're not going to do that. And it just, again, I think I went like flashback to that moment when they said no to the bread, because I was just like, this is just what you deserve. What you deserve. That line was so good. And just, again, that actress, phenomenal throughout the whole thing. Showing them around the island and just every interaction. Let me show you back to your seat. Like, maintaining that professional calmness that you go to a restaurant and expect from service people, but so clearly knowing what is in store for them, too.
Literally killing them with kindness.
Yes, literally killing them. That's perfect. Oh, it's just delicious. It's like the most savory. I was like drooling while I was watching this movie. I think
the best line reading is from her. It's when she leans in and says, tortillas.
Oh my fucking god. I have that written down 4 times. They all get tortillas. They've been laser engraved with basically like crimes people have committed or affairs or rules they've broken and like all these things. So everyone gets the tortillas. They look at them. They're like, oh my god. And the rich guys, what are these? these are tortillas. And then they go, no, what are these? These are tortillas. And then she like begins to explain how they, and I fucking, even the second time, I was the only one in the theater, and I think they could probably hear me outside the theater laughing, because it's just tortillas. Like, they've never heard of them before. It's so fucking good. God. She's phenomenal. I want to see her in a lot more things.
She's about to be in a lot. She's going to be in The Whale, the Darren Aronofsky movie. And then she just got done filming the next Wes Anderson.
No way.
And then she's actually going to be in the next Yorgos Lanthimos.
No way.
Movie. Yeah.
Wow. Good. I hope nothing but the best for her, because she absolutely nailed this part. And like her whole arc is as tumultuous as this movie is. Like, you know, she goes from the very well put together, well composed, like presenting the island and the restaurant and everything, to somebody who's almost like a rabid animal that doesn't want to be replaced and tries to kill somebody who she maybe was not instructed to kill. The plating in this movie, I want to talk about. Not only the food, but the floor, the ground, the tarp, the method that a chef uses for plating being used in these absurd large-scale ways is something that just makes me fucking beam. Because you see them setting these things up for the sous chef's The Mess, which is kind of where the movie first really goes off. It's just so amazing. Because they bring this big white tarp, they're laying herbs on it. You're like, what the fuck are they doing? And, you know, everyone kind of thinks it's like a performance, you know, something like that. And they get a big surprise.
Yeah, I mean, we're in spoilers, so we can say. A cook stands on the sheet. He's handed a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chef asks him a series of questions. Mm-hmm. And essentially what he says is, like, cooking is all you want to do. Do you have what it takes to be me, the chef? Yeah. He says, no. And then says, do you even want to be me?
Yep.
And he says, no. Yeah. And
you want my life?
You want my life? This scene is so, like, this is the real left turn into, like, a
horror.
True darkness. Because, like, there's a scene earlier where Reed Birney gets his finger cut off out of nowhere.
No, that happens after.
Oh, does it?
It happens after.
Okay.
Because that's when he's trying to leave.
This movie doesn't really have much actual violence. Like, it's more of a looming threat of violence. And, like, what very little gore there is, is very striking. And so this scene, The Mess, with this cook, it made me think about how... So I've done work in many creative fields, right? I've been surrounded with creative people for many years. I do, like, graphic design and video and audio, and I drew my whole life growing up, all sorts of stuff. And I'm always trying to better understand what makes creative people tick. Why do they love what they do? How do they get good at it?
Yeah.
I love listening to interviews with people who work in creative fields that are maybe harder to break into, like filmmakers or authors or comedians.
Yeah.
I don't personally know anyone who falls in any of those categories. So it's always so interesting to me to, like, dissect those minds.
Yeah.
This scene illustrates an idea that I've realized over time, but that I think a lot of people have realized this, but no one talks about because it is horribly depressing.
Mm-hmm.
If you have creative potential, if you have the passion it takes to pursue a career in some form of art, there are essentially three paths your life can take. One, you don't pursue those dreams. Maybe you go for, like, a safer career path, or you're just worried that you couldn't make it, so you just don't.
Yeah.
The second, you do pursue it, but you never reach where you dreamt you would be, which applies to probably most people in creative fields.
Mm-hmm.
The third is you do pursue those dreams and you do reach where you dreamt that you would be. Most people envy the people in that third category, the people who reach the top, the head chefs, the lead editors of a newspaper, the creative directors. We think of those people as having the ultimate capacity for creative fulfillment.
Yeah.
They don't have to answer to a supervisor telling them how to create. They steer the ship.
Mm-hmm.
What could be possibly better than that creatively? But once you reach the top, you now have to answer to customers and investors and critics, people whose endorsement you need, rich assholes who think they know better than you, but they are bankrolling your dream, so you have to listen to them.
Yep.
And as a result, you are as stifled or boxed in creatively as you were before, sometimes even more so.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes people who reach the top are more miserable than anyone because there's nowhere to go from there.
Yeah.
So the chef asks in this scene, is cooking your passion? Yes. Do you have what it takes to be me? No. Do you even want my life? No.
Mm-hmm.
And for this cook, every path leads to dead ends.
Mm-hmm.
So he ends his life. And I think a lot about how maybe every path for every single creative person to ever have lived actually leads to a dead end.
Yeah.
But the thing that keeps us going is the lie that someday you're going to make it out to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But what this chef realizes in the end is that the only way out is to remember what you love to make.
Yes.
But that thing doesn't necessarily pay the bills.
Yep.
So you have to just do it for yourself. It's the only way to keep your fire going.
Yeah. And that scene is so powerful because Ralph and the chef have this conversation that, and the actor who plays the sous chef is astounding in this scene. He's got tears welling up in his eyes. He knows what's happening, but he's still choosing to do it. And it's, you know, Ralph is saying he aspires to greatness, but he'll never achieve it. You know, he's not great. He'll never be great. And the dish is called The Mess. And he says, you know, at the end, there's no way to avoid the mess, which is not only the meal, but clearly, you know, ending your life in a sloppy way. But it's just like, there's no way to avoid the mess in a creative field like that. And it was, you're just like, oh my God. Like it's very jarring when he pulls out a gun and blows his head off. But, you kind of sit there and think about it afterwards, like, oh my fucking God. Like the speech and that conversation between Ralph and him just is crazy to watch because you can tell it's such a succinct way to describe what you just described. And it's, I think, again, Ralph is great in it, but that guy is astounding in that like 30-second part right there.
And it's disturbing how matter of fact it is. Like,
yeah.
These cooks are, it's very cult like
mm-hmm.
how they follow him, and obviously they know where the night's ending, and they showed up still. They signed up for this, and they seem to be eager to reach that end.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wonder about the psychology of this one cook. Why? What is it that makes him want to, you know, end his life in this fashion rather than kind of go down with the ship?
Yeah.
I think that scene is when you kind of reach a new level of uneasiness.
Yeah.
And from there, the guests lose hope at every turn, right?
Yeah.
Like there's the scene where they're offered a chance to run away, even though they're on an island, but they're like, here, go hide.
Yeah. 45-second head start.
And at first so they take their head start, all get caught and come back. At first I was like, what was the point of that scene? Like, could they have just cut that out? But it's so important for reinforcing their complete hopelessness.
Yeah.
And then there's the Coast Guard mm-hmm. guy that comes in, thinks he's going to rescue them. This is their only chance, right? They have no cell service. This is this one guy that's there. And of course he's in on it.
Of course.
And so by the end, without those events, by the end, they may have been gone out kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
But by the end, when the chocolate hats marshmallow dresses are placed on them, they just sit there like, this is it.
And that's the thing. You know, Ralph even says to him at one point, like, you know, I'm surprised you guys didn't try to fight back. You probably could have even made it. And they just are all so defeated because he's mm-hmm. done every step is just chipping away at their confidence and their hope, like you said. And I think, you know, the dish when they're outside is called Man's Folly. And, you know, he lets one of his chefs stab him because he was a creep towards her. But it's Man's Folly. So the, you know, the women go inside with this female chef and kind of enjoy another dish, which I thought was hilarious when Nicholas Holt comes in and he's like, what do you get? What do you have? But I loved that scene. Not only because Nicholas Holt wants to stay because he just loves this experience and wants to savor everything. And then you see him even hiding outside, peeking in the restaurant while the women are eating while everyone else has run. But the imagery of these chefs in white chef jackets fucking streaking through the woods is one of the, like, the most horrifying images that I've seen. It just is like so haunting because it's so unnatural to see somebody in a chef's jacket, A, outside of a kitchen, but B, aggressively sprinting through the woods trying to like catch somebody who's running for their life. And I love that so much. And then to kind of end the scene, you have the one guy who's hiding in the chicken coop, and they deliver him like this delicious dish through a window, like for the last person to be caught. And he's just sits there and he takes it and he's like, thank you. And takes a bite. And you can just, they're all so broken by that scene. Like that's the one, you know, one guy makes it to a boat and he's dragged back on shore by two chefs, and they all just get back wet shoes, wet clothes, you know, dirty, bloody, and just sit in their seats, done, broken, not a real person anymore, almost. Like, just, he has absolutely destroyed them as people. And it's like, that chicken coop scene just killed me. But I really liked that scene. I really did. I think the only scene I like more than that is when Nicholas Holt is told to cook.
Oh, man.
I could watch it every day for the rest of my life. You know, he's this guy who watches cooking shows religiously and worships the chefs and has all the tech, the Paco jet, which comes into play later. But, you know, he knows the theoretical strategies and how to make the food. He knows the steps to make the food. But when, you know, Ralph says, you're a chef, you know what you're doing. Here's your chef's jacket. Here's the kitchen. Now cook. Like, now cook is just a line that's phenomenal. The look on his face, absolute terror, and he's bringing the chefs around. Come, you know, let's watch this revolutionary. Oh, butter and shallots, you know, and it's just like such, again, these scenes just, you want them to last like 30 minutes each. Like, I want to see him cook a whole meal with them all watching.
What does he say? He's like, a method to which we were previously ignorant.
Yes, yeah. Chopping method to which we have previous, because he just can't even chop an onion. And then, you know, you kind of lose track because there's so much going on. But he takes off his chef jacket. You know, Ralph whispers something in his ear, takes off his chef jacket, and we see him walking out of the room, taking his tie off. And then the only time we see him is like a split second shot of him having hung himself in the walk-in by his own necktie. And it's like, he felt that much shame, you know, after he had built this whole identity around knowing everything, how to cook, how to make fake snow for your dishes. And just that 3 minutes that he was in the kitchen led him to that. And you kind of contrast that with the other suicide of like the chef. And you're like, it just really, that really stuck with me. Cause I think the first time I don't know, it kind of snuck by me almost that he went back there and just hung himself on his own accord. But man,
see, his identity is his love for cooking. Yeah. And like, there's literally nothing more humiliating than for this chef who he idolizes to be like, hey, you suck. Tyler's bullshit.
Yeah.
The name of the meal.
Yeah.
Is perfect.
Which is so good. Oh, what does it say on there too? God, I wish I tried to like write down all the food things, but it's like, it's impossible. And I think my favorite, when he puts, my favorite part of, maybe not my favorite, but a great part of that scene is when he puts the jacket on, Ralph's mother says, Mr. Handsome Boy. And it's just like,
we've not even mentioned the strangest through line of this entire movie,
which is that
the chef's mom is sitting in the corner.
Drunk.
There's a couple lines spoken either towards her or about her.
Yeah.
Other than that, we just get cutaways to her, and that's it.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I don't know. Because, you know, you think like maybe Ralph just wants her to be put out of her misery as well at the end of the day, you know, like clearly, you know, he tells the story of Taco Tuesday, a memorable Taco Tuesday when he says like, you know, my mom, you can see, is quite drunk, which is not unusual. One night as a kid, my dad came home quite drunk, also not unusual, and strangled her with a phone cord, and I had to stab him, and I should have stabbed him in the throat. Like, clearly neither of them are having a great time in life. And I think maybe it's just a, you know, I don't want to leave her alone type situation, but it almost seems more dark and twisted than that in a sense, but you don't really, it's kind of left up to us to decide, you know? But it almost seems like maybe revenge for not being a good parent. But who knows?
I took it as a combination of that. And also like, he feels like her protector at this point, and that he just figures if he's going down,
yeah,
the only right thing to do is to bring her down with him.
That could be. That could be. And I did, you know what I noticed is he said at one point, so when he's telling the Taco Tuesday story, he talks about like growing up in Iowa. But then at another point, he says he grew up somewhere totally different. And I was like, is this all bullshit? Is all the stuff he's saying bullshit? Because he says, you know, I learned that growing up in Bratislava at one point, but he had said Iowa earlier. And I was like, I think a lot of it is just bullshit that he's spewing for like the menu and the experience.
You think it's like in The Dark Knight, how the Joker tells conflicting stories about his scars.
It was because I was like, I caught that on the second viewing. And I was like, I never would have caught that my first time through. But it kind of makes you think like, man, he really just doesn't give a shit about these people. Like, he's just telling them everything they want to hear. And they don't care enough to even know that he said he grew up in two different spots. It's like when Nicholas Holt goes up and the guy's like, oh, we know Mr. blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, you know my name? And then Anya's like, oh, I noticed you didn't ask the chef's name. And he's like, ah, whatever. You know, like they just write these people off where like they don't even care what they're saying. They're there for the $1,200 a plate experience. And I don't know. There's so many layers to this movie.
I think it works as a great allegory for filmmaking and the film world. Mm-hmm. Like, especially the state of movies now where like every great director talks about how they can't actually make what they want to. And they have to just like fit their vision into something that's marketable. Yeah. And that's kind of always how movies have been. Like, I've always been fascinated by the way that movies are this intersection of art and commerce and entertainment.
Yeah.
So it all kind of like, there's all this compromise built in. But I do think that like the cheeseburger in this movie is like, it can apply to any artist, but someone who makes movies just wanting to make something entertaining that tastes good.
Yep.
And fuck the bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, there's the critic who builds this one guy up but has torn so many people down.
Yes.
There's the bros who are just like, there because it makes them cool to be closer to all of this. Yep. There's the
angel investor.
Yeah. Which is just such a
dark,
again, very matter of fact.
Yeah.
We're just gonna warm into the water. Yeah. But I was thinking about this in terms of like the film world, like the ecosystem of movies that we participate in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we do a show that's just about commenting on these things. And yes, we love so much of it. And we, again, I want to celebrate the cheeseburgers of life, including like the shittiest movies and the most high art movies.
Yeah.
However, I saw a lot of myself in the Nicholas Holt character.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, yeah, he's a total asshole who will literally sacrifice a sex worker for something he loves. Like, he's obviously terribly shitty. But the way he fawns over this cooking, but then when given the chance to do it, like, I lap up every drop of movies.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if I was like given the reins to be in charge of one, I would probably make something as terrible as Tyler's bullshit in this movie.
Yep.
So I would like to think that I'm not someone who's so focused on it that I like have no regard for anything else in my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did see kind of like the unhealthy tendencies in idolizing artists.
And I think that's a huge part of this movie, is you are kind of supposed to see a bit of yourself in each of these bad characters. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily even bad. You know, that's the wild thing about this movie, is the bad people are the victims. Like, you know, in your head, it's very unique in that sense. Like, these poor people who just went for a dinner, but maybe they're not, you know, poor, like poor people, you know, they're kind of all assholes, but do they deserve to be brutally murdered? Probably not. Like, who knows? And it's weird, but I think you're supposed to see some of yourself in each of them. Like, the people who go out to eat at these, you know, it's a rich guy and his wife, the one who gets his finger cut off. Is he a senator or something? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
No. But he's a regular, you know, and they've been there 12 times when most people would kill to go there once, you know, and then they ask him, like, name one dish I served you last time. And his wife says cod, and his response is, it wasn't cod, you donkey, which is just phenomenal. But, like, you think about it and you're like, I've gone to restaurants and like, I probably can't remember maybe what I had. Like, there's little bits of you that you see in each of these people. And then you kind of self-reflect like, shit, you know, which side would I be on in this? You know, if I came up mysteriously and they hadn't planned for me to be there, which side would I fall on? You know, the shit shovelers or the people who are eating the shit, in that analogy, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. But it's really a good exercise. And like, there's just not a clear good or bad, you know, there's not.
Like, If you had to identify a protagonist or antagonist in this movie, I don't know who you would call what.
Yeah.
Like, the chef is both.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's kind of both. But I think it depends so much on your own personal experience, where you fall, like how that falls. And that's so unique for a movie to leave that kind of up to you, like, you know, at the end. Because there's no clear-cut answer. There's none. Even at the end, like, there's none. You don't even know if the person who got away is... I guess she's pretty good in general. But yeah, just so unique in that sense. I just love it. I just love it. I also wrote in my notes, close-up city, because this movie has so many phenomenal close-ups, both on food and people. And I keep saying close-up city, or just anything city, because of...
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
Because of the rehearsal, yeah. Door city. Uh-huh. And I can't stop, so I wrote close-up city. Oh, the birthday bit was pretty funny. Like when they get the cake brought out to him.
thought it was funny 3 hours ago. Yeah. I like the, near the end when I think it's John Leguizamo who goes, did he just quote Martin Luther King?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. It's just good. And yeah, like Margot, you know, you can tell that Ralph wants Margot, Anya Taylor-Joy. Taylor-Joy?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Why did that just stumble me so much? That's not how you say that either. You can tell he wants her to be on his side. Like, he doesn't want to, you know, kill her as somebody who eats. He wants her to die with the people who serve. But at a certain point, you know, when she kind of radios the Coast Guard guy, he says, you know, you're an eater. You're a taker like all the rest. And then kind of pushes her away. You know, her having seen like his picture as a teenager flipping burgers with a big smile on his face, you know, her move of, I want to send your food back is just so genius.
Mm-hmm.
And like watching it the second time, you know, they hold on that picture of him as a young kid flipping burgers. And I was like, oh shit. Yeah. But the first time, like I could never have guessed what was going to happen next, you know? And yeah, just that whole, like you cook with obsession. You don't cook with love. Even your hot dishes are cold. I loved that line.
Yeah, that's good.
But just watching, like, when he starts to make the... She asks for a cheeseburger and fries, basically, after sending her food back. And, like, watching him make that... I don't know if this happened to you, but he's smiling, and the score just erupts into, like, this beautiful music. And you can tell he's just, like, exactly where he wants to be in that moment. And I was like... I don't know if there's been music throughout the rest of this movie. I was like, this is the first time I've noticed the score. And I was like, there probably is, but I was like, what a great moment to just swell it up and just have this beautiful scene of him pressing down meat and making a delicious looking burger. It was just like such a perfect moment. Like every scene in this movie is a perfect scene, I think. But that one specifically, when that score came up and I just realized like, has there been a score? This movie's so good that I wasn't even like, it wasn't even on my radar. It was just such a weird experience because usually the score is something I really pay attention to. But I think there's just so much beautiful goodness going on in this movie that it might have just slipped by. But that moment stood out to me in a big way.
I think it serves the tone very well without ever calling attention to itself.
Yeah.
Until that like crescendo and moment. It's the same composer that did the Hereditary score.
Yep.
Which I feel like also, I mean, a great... tense,
very
kind
tense.
Of heartbeat of the movie, but that very doesn't tense. Isn't like
distracting
in your face, you know?
Yeah,
the cheeseburger scene, I would say the finale took this movie from a terrific movie to an all-timer.
Yeah.
Like I just had the biggest smile on my face for the last 10 minutes of this movie.
Oh my God. I mean, her taking a bite of the cheeseburger, you know, her arms are bloody and she's... Mm. And like the title card for the cheeseburger says like cheeseburger, just a well-made cheeseburger. And you're just like, you're eating up those food cards, those title cards for the meals. That one lands and you're like, God. And then when she asked for the rest to go, like, I feel like I held my breath even the second time. Like, is he gonna let her go? Like, what's the fuck is going to happen next? But the s'more bit is just, mwah. They're plating the whole restaurant as if it's one big plate and it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. The over the head shot of them all seated there with these sauces, you know, perfectly put out on the floor, the graham cracker crust like piled up and spread out everywhere. It is a work of art. Mm-hmm. Like I can't imagine how long that took them to get it perfect like that. His speech on how terrible s'mores are brought my joy to an all-time high. And then bringing them the marshmallow, you know, shirts, dresses, whatever you want to call them, and the chocolate hats, you're just like, what? Who thinks of this? Like, what an amazing move.
Delightfully twisted.
Oh my God, it's so fucked up. And like, it's just amazing. It's just amazing. And he tells them all, like, you represent the ruin of my craft and my art, while they're just sitting there taking it. Like, they're all so hopeless. That bird's eye shot is just the most gorgeous thing in the world. And the s'more food title card again was fantastic. But yeah, it's just a beautiful ending. And Anya eating that burger on the boat, watching the explosion, cut to black. Ugh. It's just watching people in situations like this is just so fascinating. And watching them all react so different. Like the couple that kind of comes clean on their shit and like they're just like, whatever. The, you know, John Leguizamo and his assistant, who's like, I wrote you a negative recommendation letter to Sony. She's like, yeah, I know you CC'd me on it. But like, they're all just coming clean. And it's so funny to watch. It shouldn't be funny, but it is funny because it's a movie. It should be terrifying and sad.
I think you go into the movie thinking that this is going to be like a cannibal movie. Maybe they're going to eat some of the people, or that this is going to be like a torture movie, almost like a more like high art version of like Saw or something. But it's really not about hurting them. It's about deconstructing them and just making them question themselves and examining how they became these people.
Yes.
And in the end, it's like, okay, we're done here.
Yep.
Let's just go up in flames. Because there's no other way out of this.
And it's, you know, there's so many times where throughout the movie where Ralph tells people like, we're all dying tonight. Or like the female chef is like, no, it doesn't work if you guys don't die. That was my idea.
Right.
Genius. Like, I loved it. And it's just like so matter of fact that they just all come to accept like, oh, we're all going to die tonight. That by the time a literal chocolate hat is placed on their head, nobody moves. Nobody takes it off and tries to run. They're part of the menu now. Like, they have become the menu. And they're just sitting there as if they were prepared and put on a plate to be eaten, you know? It's just, like, the restaurant as a plate, it's just so fucking good. Like, goddamn. And, like, imagine, you know, the headlines in the news the next day if something like that were to happen. Like, it just blows my mind. How much I love this movie, and I think I can watch it every day for the rest of my life. I think it might make our top 10 list.
Oh, you might.
I think it might. I think it might.
I want to leave you with this. This was not my realization, but I read this online. This movie is about 12 dinner guests sharing their last supper.
Oh, is it 12?
I can't be accidental.
Oh, my God. So Ralph's died for their sins. Maybe. What about his mom, then? Is she God?
She's God.
Drunk God. Is it 12? No, I'm trying to count in my head.
Well, there's the three bros.
Three bros, there's John and his assistant.
There's the old couple.
Old couple, Nicholas and Anya.
The critic.
The critic and her
boyfriend.
Boyfriend.
And then probably the mom.
Yeah, the mom.
And she's dining.
God, you're right. I mean, that's the thing. I feel like I hate using the onion as layers from Shrek analogy, but there's so many layers to this movie that I feel like every time you watch it, you're going to see little different things or just think of it differently. Because, again, I feel like depending on how your day is going, you're going to see this movie totally different. Your perspective will definitely shift. And like throughout your life, imagine watching this like 20 years from now when, well, I mean, who knows where we'll be. But like if one of us is super rich and has lost touch, like this movie would be totally different. Like, I don't know. It's just, I want to watch this with everyone I know so I can tell how good of a person they are. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's so interesting to me.
I want to watch it with everyone I know just because I know it'd be a great time.
It would be a great time. It absolutely would be a great time. I also decided that I need to go to culinary school and become a cook after watching this movie. So my 10-year plan, Nathan, is to graduate culinary school and open a restaurant in Madison. So 10 years from now, 2032, check in and see if that's done.
And it will be a Wendy's franchise.
It might be. It might be. And let me tell you what I won't make. Shitty garlic bread.
Here's my dream. I'm going to invite 12 of our closest friends over.
All right, I'll cook. Happy to serve. Happy to shovel the shit. I think we could gush about this one for a while. I think we should watch this movie with a bunch of friends at some point. Because I'd like to watch this with you, but also we should just expose everyone we can to it. Because it's fucking great. What a unexpected treat. Like, totally unexpected coming from this movie.
Even if it doesn't get success now while it's new,
mm-hmm.
I have no doubt this is going to be the movie that in 2, 3, 5, 10 years, everyone's going to look back on and be like, no, that's the movie from that year.
Yes.
That's the real stuff.
That's why I wanted to hit streaming, because I just want people to have access to it.
It would do fantastic on Netflix. Oh, this is a Searchlight film, so I think it'll be on Hulu.
Ugh.
But, I mean, ease of access, anything that's easier to get to,
That's
I think it'll be great for it.
I agree.
Speaking of ease of access.
Yeah. It's a good thing my bathroom's easy access, because that lactate is not helping.
Every one of our episodes is on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm, anywhere podcasts are found.
Boom, boom, boom. And if you like what you hear, want to support us, leave us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. It's the best way to support the show, other than sharing it and shouting it from a mountaintop.
You can get some merch, you know, a nice gift for the fast food film friend in your life.
That's right.
At fastfoodfilmfriends.com.
And we're on Instagram and Facebook at Fast Food Film Friends, Twitter at FFFF Podcast. Or you can email us at fastfoodfilmfriends@gmail.com and let us know, you know, what you've been watching, what you've been eating, or what we should do next.
Until then,
farewell.